Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We're back to normal today. They're not all crazy like they were on Tuesday. Although, Jim, I will point out, as soon as you announced that I was not in contention for Treasury Secretary, we get the news today that it is going to be Jack Lew. So now that I'm out and Krugman's out, I guess that really was the short list. So good job advancing the plot there. That was well done.
I like to think that your withdrawal from it helped make Obama's decision. Well, if it wasn't Corumbus, it had to be Lou. So exactly. There you go. Exactly. And, of course, now, thankfully, we have all these fantastic headlines we can write about lunacy and, you know, all that kind of other puns we can write about the, you know, generally insane policies we can see coming out of the Treasury Department in the coming weeks and years.
Exactly. And there's no doubt, it would seem, that he's likely to be confirmed. He was the budget director. He's now the chief of staff and so forth. So, but it leads to our top martini here, because now the New York Times is kind of wringing its hands over the fact that Obama's inner circle is pretty much all men, I guess with the exception of Valerie Jarrett, once John Kerry's at State, and Chuck Hagel will keep a man at Defense, and Jack Lew at Treasury, and it looks like it's going to be another male at Chief of Staff, given the short list that's out there right now. And, of course, as conservatives, Jim, you and I are all about the best person for the job, regardless of race or gender or what have you. It's always the lefties that are obsessed about this demographic breakdown cabinet that looks like America thing. So it's kind of entertaining that they're actually turning their attention on the Democrats as this plays out here.
You know, this is a kind of an interesting tradition, because you go all the way back to 1993 and Bill Clinton putting together his cabinet. And apparently at one point he called these critics bean counters in this category, that they were focused on race and gender and all this stuff, and not focused on him getting the people he wanted to enact the policies he wanted in these various cabinet agencies. Well, here we are, 2013, and the exact same phenomenon's going on. As somebody who really does want the best folks in the job, then, you know, there's a part of it. We chuckle at this. If Obama then ends up making picks that he doesn't really want, just in order to have the right kind of gender diversity or ethnic diversity or other types, like, it's kind of intriguing that the first African American president doesn't get a pass on having sufficient diversity in his cabinet, because he can always say, well, look at me, okay, I'm a minority and I'm in the top spot, so I think we're already, you know, we've covered our bases in terms of minorities. So it's kind of fun to watch this rebounding against Obama. Hopefully this doesn't end up with some, like, you know, real reach of a pick. In fact, perhaps the great irony is that, you know, Michelle Flournoy, I believe is her name, was the currently working at the Pentagon. A lot of folks had said might a strong contender to be the first female Secretary of Defense didn't get picked. And the utterly awful Chuck Hagel got picked. So, look, maybe it's an affirmative action program for white men, Greg. Whatever someone says, look, I want to have the very best people in the job, as Obama keeps insisting, the knee-jerk response from the usual complainers is, well, how dare you insinuate that only the best people for the job are white males? Well, look what's going on with the Obama administration. I guess it's kind of, we shouldn't be surprised that he's running into this kind of grief and aggravation. Kind of fun to watch him dealing with it. I think what's also intriguing is that the folks who are complaining, these complaints will die down within a matter of days, because in the end, Obama's of the left. His critics are of the left, and they're all going to make nice at the end of the day. For those of us, we look at it, we're like, well, does this matter or not? Does a diverse cabinet matter or not? And I think, as we all strongly suspect, it matters for Republican presidents, but not for Democratic presidents. And, you know, any chance we can shine a big spotlight on the hypocrisy of the left is always a good day.
Yes. The New York Times quick to point out that Obama has appointed women to 43% of administration positions. The Neanderthal Bush administration, only 33%. So, you know, apparently still doing better in the bean counting department, as Clinton put it.
Well, you know, the folks on, you know, the feminists and groups like that would be quick to point out that, look, nobody, you know, it's one thing to have a whole bunch of assistant secretaries, but, you know, power flows from the top. And, you know, if you have a lot of, you know, lower level, you know, women and minorities in lower level positions, well, gee, is that really diversity, or is that just giving them the low rungs on the ladder and telling them to be happy with that?
Yeah, absolutely right.
I'm just pouring a little gasoline on the fire there, Greg. I want to have as much, you know, these groups as irked with each other as possible. So let's not let anybody off the hook on that point.
No, as long as they're going to play this ridiculous game, we might as well just make it as ridiculous as possible, because clearly Bush put minorities and women in much higher positions in the cabinet in some cases than this president has. But moving on to other ridiculous news, but this is actually the bad martini, the Republican Main Street Partnership. This is a relatively new group that's designed to promote moderates in the GOP, to try and win people into the GOP who are perhaps scared off for some reason by the Tea Party side of the Republicans and social conservatives perhaps. And now, as a result of who knows what, maybe the election results or the fiscal cliff debacle that happened over the past few days, the group has already decided to remove the title Republican from Main Street Partnership. It's now just, instead of Republican Main Street Partnership, it's Main Street Partnership, and they're going to welcome center-right Democrats to the fold here as they try to push more moderate views into the political mainstream. And so, Jim, I guess you could say they now have no labels.
There you go. They're just them. you know, here's the thing. This is a group. I remember when this group was set up to be the right of center equivalent of the Democratic Leadership Council, a now defunct group that was designed to bring the Democrats back towards the center after the debacle of the Mondale and Dukakis defeats in 84 and 88. So, look, as somebody who believes, let a thousand flowers bloom, let all kinds of different organizations and viewpoints have their seat at the table and do their best to pull policy in their preferred direction, I have no particular objection to a group of moderate Republicans getting together and organizing and attempting to support each other and attempting to mobilize viewpoints. One, I think it says something of just how toxic the name Republican is right now. That this group basically believes it can't function with it in its name. Some of this may reflect Stephen LaTourette, the new president. Tom Davis was the president until recently. The second thing also is this, you know, talk about outreach to blue dog Democrats. I don't mind issue-based outreach to folks who have, you know, similarly ideological alignment or agreement on particular issues. But once you say, like, if you're the mainstream partnership and you're willing to elect Democrats, well, gee, why should folks on the right give to you? Unless the idea is to support the Heath Shulers of the world in divided Democratic primaries or something like that. I don't really see how this it seems like a group completely forgetting what the point of its mission and objective is. LaTourette describes it as the American political system is like a donut. You've got sides, but you don't have anything in the middle. Well, you can't just arbitrarily decide, well, we're going to represent the middle. I mean, this dynamic doesn't just appear out of nowhere. And the idea of let's take one sort of right of center group and take one more big step to the left, I don't really see how that's going to be a good news for this organization. I don't think it's going to be good news for Republicans. I don't think it's going to be good news for conservatives. I just strikes me as a spectacularly wrongheaded approach to these things. If in 2 years from now, the new insert adjective here, Main Street Partnership, is defunct, I think we can point out to say, look, when there aren't that many passionate, moderate donors and moderate advocates and folks who want to be grassroots members of a grassroots moderate organization. And so if you're going to have to stand for something, you know, what does the Main Street Partnership stand for when you take out the Republican from its name? At least before, you know, it's like, okay, these are the, you know, non-down-the-line conservative Republicans, and there's always going to be room for them at the table. The idea that this is now just a, you know, centrist united. He does. It kind of echoes No Labels and all these other groups that are really good at issuing press releases and stuff, but don't really have much influence over the political process.
On to the third martini today, and perhaps one of the most fun ones we've had one in a while. We don't usually enjoy the results we see from public policy polling, but they got pretty creative in trying to explain just how unpopular Congress is. They're specifically talking about the 112th Congress, and they probably try to blame the Republican House more than not. But basically what they did is ask people to prefer something compared to Congress. And, well, Congress didn't do very well. For example, root canals. People preferred that to Congress, 56 to 32. Replacement NFL refs, 56 to 29. Head lice, 67 to 19. Colonoscopies, 58 to 31. Even cockroaches, carnies, used car salesman, and Genghis Khan, for Pete's sake, although John Kerry would say Genghis Khan, edged out Congress, at least on a plurality in some of those cases. But before you get too depressed, Congress did manage to score plurality victories against telemarketers, John Edwards, the Kardashians, lobbyists, Lindsay Lohan, playground bullies, and they also scored majority victories against North Korea, meth labs, communism, and gonorrhea. So, Jim, there's some hope.
All right. So a couple of quite fascinating things. I mean, some of those figures you cite there, Greg, don't stun me a ton. For example, the teeming millions of Mongolian Americans explains the high ratings for Genghis Khan. Greg, who's pro head lice? Show me those voters. Even if it's like 4%, who are these people? You know, who like, you know, lice. It sounds like rice. Maybe it's the same thing. I'm very curious about that. Being the Kardashians, here's an observation I'm going to make. We can say, American public can say how much they hate the Kardashians, but the Kardashians have a net worth of like several bazillion dollars, okay? And they've got like, every time you turn around, they have like four different new reality shows. I keep waiting for Kim Kardashian to be on the cover of The Economist, because she's appeared on the cover of every other magazine. So America can say how much we loathe the Kardashians, and I would say I loathe them as much as everyone else, but something makes them popular. And I don't understand how, you know, you can't be so phenomenally unpopular, because otherwise, you mentioned North Korea being on that list. North Korea would have its own reality show. You know, you'd see that kind of success. So I think some of this is pollsters lying to other people. The other thing is playground bullies. I'd be very interested to see do a deep dive into the numbers of that one. I'd love to see a demographic breakdown of which groups, which party ID, you know, who has a soft spot in their heart for playground bullies there, Greg.
Hard to imagine coming up with this list. By the way, Congress also beat Ebola. So there's...
Who... Is it some sort of like the... Oh, it's the... what's the organization that's always worried about population growth? Zero population growth. Maybe they're pro Ebola folks. Like, man, that's a fantastic Ebola is a. I love the work it does, killing lots of people. You know, beyond that, I'm trying to get my head around all of the respondents of this poll. Also suggesting that some people may not take pollsters all that seriously. And if you know when a pollster starts asking, do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of head lice, bullies, and Ebola? Maybe people start messing around with the pollster and saying, yeah, I like all those groups.
To be fair, this is their comparison to Congress, not overall favorability ratings. But Congress did lose to France, Brussels sprouts, traffic jams, and political pundits, although not by much, unfortunately, Jim.
Whew, we're still ahead of Congress. All
yes,
right.
Yes. Barely within the margin of error. Anyway, on that note, good luck, Congress, recovering from those approval ratings. Jim and I will be back tomorrow. Jim, have a great day.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Karembas of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.